Tuesday, May 2nd, Board of Selectmen meeting to order. And we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, first on the agenda is approval of the April 18th minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes of the regular meeting, April 18th, 2017.
Discussion?
Yeah, I wonder if the computer could spell my name right.
Sure, no problem.
Hebert. I thought we'd have that down pat by now.
Different places, it's different spelling.
Microsoft Word recognizes that as a word, so.
All right, with that change, all in favor?
Aye.
Correspondence, quite a bit of it. Chamber of Commerce Northeast is having their 29th annual golf invitational Wednesday, June 14th at Quintessit. $150 a person is $613. Packet of information from Connecticut Trust pertaining to 915-929 Mill. You should have gotten that.
Yeah, I received it front and back. Is there anything else?
I sent you whatever they sent me.
And the
package. I will have a copy made for you.
Okay.
Just that?
Nothing more than that.
Unless it was too big and they just aborted it, because it was a big file.
I'll check.
Okay. Correspondence from Pete Vangel concerning 46 Rawson Ave. He wanted to direct that the P&Z, he was going in front of them on the 24th to renew his permit for 55 and older community up there. So we were CC'd on that. From Teague. Teague, as you know, the town owns the building. They've got an offer by Charlie Whedon. He's the one that helped them build and design that building over there when it was going up. And he has a lot to do with the design and construction of the Teague building. When they erected it, they did keep solar power in mind. The back of the building facing the garden is set to catch the sun. He proposes to gift us the panels and the installation using the ZREC program. He would then take the tax credits for 15 years in order to compensate for the initial outlay. The town would then accept and own the system. We would pay for a reduced rate for electrical for those 15 years. After that, we would not be charged as long as we produce enough power to cover our usage. There would also be the question of insurance. He is going to be having a meeting on May 9th. We have Charlie attending our May 9th meeting of our executive committee here at Teague, and they asked me to join that. But that's something on the horizon that he's wishing to get.
Not interrupt your correspondence, but that's something maybe the building committee could look at. They're looking at alternative energy. That almost related to that.
Yeah, I guess he's going to be throwing the proposal to you initially out first, and then it will go through a process. But he's going to have a conversation with them. And I believe John is going to be there. John, are you on the executive committee? No.
Building committee?
No, building committee, yes.
Building committee.
And not the, I'm not sure.
I'm having a forward copy of that to the building committee.
I will. Aquarian Water Company, stewards of environment, has a May 1st deadline for this year's Aquarian Environmental Champion Awards approaches. We wanted to send out a friendly reminder to encourage your constituents to consider nominating an individual or small or large business, student, or non-profit organization that has contributed to improvement in the environment through the protection, conservation, restoration, and so forth. I did get it off of the school. May 1st was the deadline, which was today. So this is something that they give out. The annual 2017 annual meeting of Alaska Green Valley will be Wednesday, May 31st in Pomfret from 4 to 7 p.m. Tour of Hull Forest Products, Modern Sawmill, and then they go into their meal and so forth. It's $25 a person, so they'll actually be touring the Hull Forest facility up there. EastCon brochure for employee education programs and workplace that is available. Connecticut Water also sent up their normal newsletter, monthly newsletter, a variety of things that they're doing for public, you know, any of the projects, water cost saving, etc. So it's available if anybody wishes to read it. Yeah, that's what I have for correspondence that came in. Anybody had anything?
Nothing other than things you already mentioned.
Selectmen's comments. Probably the most important thing that has transpired is our meeting today to set the annual town meeting that we did. The annual town meeting is set for May 15th this month. It will be held at the library, community center, May 15th, Monday, 7 p.m. for the review of the annual town meeting, which is for a moderator, the numbers for the education and the regular budget, a resolution for applying for grants, and then removing it and going to referendum, and I'm highlighting that. Notice of the referendum is May 23rd, 2017. Thursday, they did propose, and the Board of Finance had agreed on a $25,922,696 total budget, consisting of $7,472,543 for the general government budget, $18,450,153 for the education budget. Those $7 million and the $18 million will be broken out into two separate questions on the ballot, like we always have done in the past. And there is two resolutions, one to apply for grants, and the other one is to for local capital improvements, which is part of the budget, in the amount of $162,242. So there will be two resolutions to adopt, and then it'll adjourn to the May 23rd referendum, and that's on the, I think it's on the Tuesday, correct?
I think you're right.
And it'll be going out to that. The ad one is going into the went into the paper today. So we approve that. That will be moving forward. That is the general budget for expenditures. One of the challenges that we are having right now on the budget is what's going on in Hartford. Hartford has not come up with its budget as of yet. So based on the numbers that the governor has given, there has been reductions in some revenues coming into the town. He threw out a starting point, I believe it was $1.4 million alone, and I may be off on that. It was like $2 million right off the bat just on education cuts. And we know that it could be anywhere from what the governor's doing to what maybe what we got last year, but nobody knows until the legislature and the Senate gets together. So with this proposal that is going forward, it is the expenditure side. Hopefully by the time we pass our budget, we may have some better numbers that will offset what the revenue may be coming in, and we don't know what that's going to be. Based on the information that I got when I came home last night and what I saw on the news this morning, the governor is supposed to be sitting down with the legislature and the Senate to try and get this thing moving, but nobody knows where it's going to go at this point. Will they work together or whatever? Whatever it is right now, it's a complete mess, and all 169 cities and towns are being held hostage on this, and none of the towns or cities know where to go with the revenues coming in. Some are taking the approach, revenues will be the same, so they're going in with the same revenues and proposing their budgets that way. Some are going for worst case scenario, and some are going, you know, in the middle of the road, and that's kind of what we did, a little bit of the middle of the road. We're not sure where it's going to go, and we won't know what the revenues will be until they get a budget in place. So when it does go to referendum, and I will be on the radio with the school, and we'll get as much information out, you know, publicly with that. Currently, our mill rate is at 26.06. As it stands, it's going to go to 28.8. Okay, that's as it's proposed. That's without the state budget and knowing what the revenues will be. And they expect it to be somewhere between low to high. It's going to be somewhere they're going to come to a compromise, which means once this is passed, the Board of Finance does not have to set the mill rate until such time as they feel, you know, they've got the best numbers to work with on revenue coming in. So at this point, this is what it equates to. It could go, you know, somewhere in between the 26 and the 28. That's what we know. And we won't know anything more than that. And again, it's all 169 towns that are being held hostage until the Hartford gets its act together and gives us some numbers. It's one of the problems that we have this year where, and in years past, where we always have to get our budget done before the state gets theirs done, and it makes it very hard to make prediction. And this year is probably the worst that anybody has seen it ever, because usually we have a good idea that revenues will be, you know, pretty close, and nobody knows at what it will be at this time. So I figured I'd bring that up. The other thing that I did have a meeting with representatives from South End Reclaim Thursday. They did come in to meet with myself and town attorney, and they are still looking towards the ladder of the deconstruction, demolition of the 929 and 915 mills. They have met with SHPO, which is a state historical, and they did meet with us, and both sides have expressed a fact that it's on historical that the unless it is proven that the building is cannot be revitalized, there would be no way that they would condone deconstruction of the mill unless it was something that was one of the add-on buildings that had no value at all that needed to be, you know, demolished for, you know, something of that nature, but they would have to put a plan forward. So with that, they express where they are, we express where we are in the revitalization, and we have a meeting on May 9th with SHPO coming down, and they're going to do a walkthrough of the mill with an engineer building and their people out of Hartford and some other potential developers that have expressed an interest in developing the mill. So this is part of the long process with this to see where it goes. We got a walkthrough May 9th at 1 p.m. at the mill itself. And that is what I know at this point.
At the area where they're looking to demolish?
They're
going to
be
demolish, or
the touring area? The whole mill.
Is that walkthrough open to the public?
Sorry, this is...
In answer to you, I'll just touch on it. I don't know. I know it's DECD, there's SHPO, some of the various agencies that are coming down that are involved with this. There's also some of the potential buyers, I mean the potential developers. that have expressed an interest in this to see where it goes to do this. It will be, I believe, our CME engineer that's doing the Bronzefield that will be there as well. And they've already done some of the preliminary work in Bronzefield Phase 1 and going through the Phase 1, Phase 2 process. If it is open to the public, I would let everybody know. I would put it up on the website. I can't answer for the mill owner because there could be potential for liability and so forth because it is private property. And I think those are two big subjects that I have.
Is the sidewalk being put on by economic or by any town entity, or strictly a sidewalk set up between the developers and the owner?
It is being put on by, at the request of SHPO, which is a state historical.
Can I might ask, if SHPO doesn't condone it, does that mean that it won't happen, or they just don't like it, but they can't do anything?
It basically becomes a legal battle where there's different, and I do want to have a meeting appropriately like we did before at the library, bring you up to date, and I'll know more after the night where everything is going and what that will ensue. There are things in places with the lien. There's language in there that demolition can't happen because we've loaned money for the windows in it. With that, there's some legal process where the state's attorney gets involved. I think I covered that. We covered that a couple months ago at that time. I think it was Dan or Brad. Brad from either DECD or Connecticut Trust was there at the time. Connecticut Trust. And he kind of went over some of that. So there is options to it. And in order for it to, for the historical to agree to anything, it's going to have to be proved that there is no revitalization on it because it's not possible, so or feasible, you know, the whole project, and they have their standards. So this is part of that process, and at which point, if there's, you know, Connecticut Trust will decide with SHPO to move it to the state's the Attorney General. So there's a whole process, and this is the beginning phases of all of this.
I'm not aware if the businesses on that property have been notified of the sidewalk.
They may not have, because this all transpired off on the 27th on Thursday, so I don't know if anybody's been notified. I would think that it would behoove the mill owners to notify the tenants that
if they're going through the tenant space.
They don't have all the keys, so right. Okay.
But that's where we're at with that. And the beginnings was part of the correspondence from Connecticut Trust, laying out some of the known facts that was there. So everybody has been steadily moving and gathering as much information since this whole thing came about with South End Reclaim. And it's been continuously moving and gathering more information as we're going on with it to, you know, gather the facts and, you know, come to a proper conclusion or direction that we will be going, you know, with this from all aspects. So after the 9th, we'll have more information, and as soon as it's appropriate, we will have a meeting at the library and let everybody know where we stand completely and where everybody is posturing with the facts. So I look forward to the 9th. I have a good walkthrough. It's been a few years since I've walked through the building, especially the sections that have been renovated and are ready for incubator type business system to move in and so forth. So that's where we're at. And that's what I have.
Yeah, just one thing. A few years ago, I was holding conversations, and I brought it forward to the previous administration about a nonprofit organization and a program that's available through Darkness to Light, and started thinking about it after hearing the alleged incident that took place in Putnam with a Little League individual. And basically what Darkness to Light is, it's a training program that empowers adults to prevent child sexual abuse. Educated and authorized facilitators and trainers through Darkness to Light will come into a community and will provide a training workshop for individuals who have a lot of one-on-one contact with children. So think Little League, think Girl Scout, Boy Scout leaders, things of that nature. At the time, there is a doctor here in Putnam who actually is a trainer, Dr. Erica Kesselman. It was difficult to kind of figure out scheduling because we were kind of working with Teague, who at the time was undergoing a lot of different things with their new building as well. So the previous administration was definitely open to the concept of moving forward with seeing what, you know, that would entail. And I had also brought up the fact that, or the concept of perhaps seeing if we could even just leave a little, you know, donation bucket, if you will, at different local establishments here in town where people could contribute for the training, because I'm not quite sure if that's something that, you know, we have in our budget and or that the Board of Finance would approve. It's a couple hundred dollars, I believe, per workshop. We could host one or two. But I wanted to see if the cost had gone up, and I wasn't able to find out what it costs to host one, but they do have, like, find a training session near you, and I didn't see one in Connecticut that was upcoming, so I was going to have a conversation with Dr. Kesselman just to see what her costs are to have something, to have a training. She's an OBGYN over at Putnam, at the Campbell Hospital. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you might ask with this Darkness of Light, is there a taped webinar or something that they may have put out?
So there's online training, and so I don't know if there's a cost associated with that. So I didn't click on it to see, but I know that they also offer that in addition to an actual in-person.
Because I know through Kerman we have some webinars and online classes that can be taken at no cost as long as you're a member of CCM.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that, you know, based on, you know, the Little League, the Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, whatever organization, that maybe it's something that they can do online or whatever, there's a possibility. So if there is
a
bunch of printed information or something that we can hand out to these organizations, you know, to help them make contact.
Yeah, if the online especially is free, that would be incredible. And what also reminded me was that we're appointing staff for the summer camp program, which I think would be another great opportunity. It would be a win-win for the children that are attending the camp and also for the individuals that are working to have that training under their belt when they go move forward. A lot of them I know are interested in doing a lot with children and youth in the future. So that was the second reason why I wanted to bring it up this evening in particular. So I'll look at the online training and see if there's any costs associated with it, and I'll report back to the board. And what I would like to do at some point, too, is, you know, whatever route we decide to go, if the online course is free, whatever means is to just make the public aware and to try and reach out to, if there's anyone outside of the obvious that we're not thinking of, please let me know.
Yeah, it seems like this time of the year there's an awful lot of sports and
different things that are going on. Oh, yeah. Yeah, now kids are getting outside and active. Nope, that was it.
Okay, with that, citizens' comments. Miss.
Continental Coast Railroad. I just have some stuff. You guys talked about advisory committee looking at some guy in Mendon, I believe, Mr. Horn.
Yes.
I got some information I just want to give the board.
Thank you.
Okay.
This one's mine. You have a thick one? Anyone?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
That's it. Go on out.
Wayne O'Brien, 108, Paving Brook. I missed what you said about the budget, but on Wind Radio, Finley kind of sat there, and there's no increase. So my question is, how do they manage to do it? And we're not getting anything from you guys. So they've already had their meeting, and it's going to go to referendum. So my question is how did you, how do they do it, and you guys can't?
Well, we're not going to referendum.
Huh?
No, how come they ended up with no increase?
Well, what's your question? Because we're going to referendum.
My question is, we haven't heard what, are you going for an increase on the mill rate? We haven't heard anything that I know of.
I did say that.
Okay.
I did explain that and where the predicament we're at.
What are we going up?
As it's proposed right now, unfortunately you weren't here, it's proposed at 28 point, anyway. I don't have it. It's 28 something.
28.8.
28.8.
They're going up $1.60 a thousand.
Okay. All right.
26.06.
Right. All right. It's 28.82, I believe, to 26.06. Proposed. It's based on what we're, and I'll go over it again. We have the town and the education side of the budget. These are the expenditures that were approved. Where we are in limbo is based on the revenues that are coming in. Some towns have budgeted same revenues as last year. Some towns have gone to the full high end. Some have gone in the middle. We've gone in the middle. Based on the budget numbers that we have. And this is exactly what I explained before. The state is doing their due diligence. They're starting to have some conversations. Even if we pass this budget as it stands, the mill rate will probably not be set until the very last moment, until revenue numbers start to come in. Then they'll be able to base the mill rate. All right? Now, in answer to Killingly, I asked that exact question. The reason why Killingly is not having an increase is they just had a reevaluation and their grand list went up by 2.5%. Okay. So they made up the money in the grand list.
Okay.
So their mill rate did not change.
Since our revamp, how much have we gone up on our mill rate? I'm not quite sure, but I think we're upwards of $5 and going higher since the revamp.
Wayne, I can't answer
that
question.
So, I mean, I'm just asking. My only question is where are we going? I mean, is the school going up higher?
The school, I think, requested $473,000 in that area, and they cut out $200,000 out of the budget on Thursday. So their increase is $273,000, rounding it out to $280,000
in
that area.
Okay.
That is it, their increase in request over last year. And, you know, and the town has its increases based on the capital expenditures and some of the costs that we have incurred.
And how much is the town going up?
I don't have those numbers to put in front of me. I didn't bring it.
I'm just asking, are we going up $500,000 on the town side? $800,000? What are we going up?
I don't want to give you any wrong numbers. If you stop by the office tomorrow, Wayne, I'll give you the exact numbers of what we're going. I didn't bring anything with me.
Because, I mean, we've gone up on all sides, and you just keep going up, and guess what? Somewhere along the way, something's going to go to clunk. Because you know what? Your mill rate is what makes people want to come to town. The higher you bring it, guess what? The more you don't look good to them. Am I right? You're not going to get somebody to come from Dudley over to here because Dudley's at $12 per thousand. I mean, I'm just saying. Your mill rate is what makes you comparable to people.
I'm not going to disagree with you, Wayne. There's a lot of factors between the different towns, the services they get, the value that they tax their property on. There's a whole formula that creates all of that. So to compare sometimes can be difficult. Yes, one town may be cheaper than the other. You've got to compare apples to apples. you know, with how they tax. There's also been some proposals coming out of Hartford that they allow us to tax at a higher, instead of 70%, go up higher. There's a lot of stuff that Hartford's dealing with, and we're caught in the middle right now. And if you take away the governor's increase, we'd be at the normal, around the mill or so, starting out and, you know, proposing to the people. I mean, it's the revenue numbers, and it's the perfect storm that's coming through. Nobody's happy with it. We're all disenchanted with it. And by law and everything, we have to present a budget. We have to go to town meeting by the third Monday of the month, which happens to be the 15th. We have to propose something. The Board of Finance gave us something to propose. This is what we're bringing. I tried to explain it, why it's a 2.8 mil increase and what the deciding factors are. And it's where it's at. And we're trying to get out as much information through the paper, on the radio, and so forth to explaining it. Right now, 169 towns and cities are being held hostage by Hartford.
It's been that way every year for a long time.
Anyway, that's the best way I can explain it. But if you want to stop by the office tomorrow, I have all the information that I did not bring with me this evening. Anybody else? Rob?
Rob Mann, 15 Middle Drive. Yeah, just Wayne, what's going for referendum vote? You know, of course, he said our mill rate is 26.06. The one that's going up for vote is 28.82. On a house that's valued at $200,000, of course, the evaluations are done at 70%. So 70% of that would be $145,000. So with the 28.82 increase, if it passes, somebody with a house of that value would pay $400.20 more a year. So if you have a house that's worth more than that, obviously it would be more. But that's the gist of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, hearing none, we'll move forward. Okay. Could you get a copy? We have Angela here from the Rec Department with their annual adventure camp staff. And if you could be so kind as to explain this for us, if
sure.
The board has any questions.
Absolutely. So we start back in January through March taking in applications. We reach out to our prior staff first, send them an email, intent to return. We have the opportunity here to either re-interview all of them, which there have been options to do that. Based on this year, those returning had excellent reviews. Felt the need not to interview all the returning staff. Took in more applications, and over April vacation, interviews with myself. The previous year's supervisor was not returning, but has been working at camp for over 5 years. And then another very experienced staff who has been there for more than 2 years. So did interviews with the three of us, point system, they get scored, overall impression, etc. And based off of that, we did hire new staff, and that is our final list. As far as assignments, besides lifeguards and supervisors, those are not, I did not give you assignments for them because they're not fixed. As an example of, you know, we can assign four counselors to green group if our 9 and 10 year olds, but if we only have enough for one group, those counselors will be reassigned elsewhere, as well as depending on numbers of our registration that we should be looking for in June, we'll decide which of those two if we need to cut down. But those are the proposed based on our previous years.
And this was presented to the Rec Commission for...
Yeah, the Rec Commission. I don't remember the date on that.
26th.
Okay, so at our last meeting, it was approved by the Commission.
And how many, do you know how many were returning from last year?
Oh, if you let me look at the list.
Sure, I can look.
Sorry.
Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely. I will let you know. Ten of them are returning staff.
Okay.
And is it usually about 21 individuals that you hire every year?
Yep, actually we hire 22. The only one missing off of that list is we have yet to hire a second lifeguard. We are currently putting out for that and working with our current lifeguard to check out certification classes in the area and trying to get in touch with that. That individual obviously has come through you as well, but that has not yet come in yet. So it's about 22 individuals each year.
And what is the, what is the counselor to student or camper ratio? Are you mandated to?
We are not because we are not state licensed. However, we try to keep as close to state licensing standards as possible, especially right now because we get state funding through Care for Kids. And they are kind of requiring that even non-licensed programs meet state standards. So right now, I believe that ratio, we go by the 1 to 10, which is recommended, but I think at most times we actually meet 1 to 8, which is very much recommended, and we would like to try to keep that if possible with the budget.
Thank you.
Is this roughly the normal turnover that you have? About half of them return, half of them
go? Yep. I mean, last year was a big year for returning, and that was unusual. Last year we had about 75% return, but this was about normal, though.
I move that we approve these individuals for higher summer records program.
As presented?
As presented.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela.
Okay, the VFW has sent us a request dated the 24th to sell poppies at the transfer station. This is something that they do every year, May 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th, at the transfer station and other establishments around the town. I think this is just a normal letter that they...
I move that we approve the VFW's request to sell poppies on May 24th, 5, 6, 7, 2017.
Second.
Discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We have a letter from the Thompson Conservation Commission, and I did ask Carolyn to come down, and Lynn is also here as well. She has some info she's going to give us as well. But this came from the chair, Phil Thomas, and I did ask Carolyn to come down to give the board a little bit of history and so forth on this request. So if you would, Carolyn.
I trust everybody has read the letter that was sent. The Conservation Commission was asked by a group of citizens, and they actually sitting here with two of them, Lynn, Sue, and Ann, and Lamar. If we would be in support of the town going for an ordinance to ban fracking waste from being stored here, used here, brought into the town for any purpose. And there are a number of towns in Connecticut that have adopted ordinances recently. The state, the legislature is working on a bill to prohibit it in the state, but the legislative session won't end until June 7th, so we don't know what's going to happen with that bill. It has to be, that it went through the environment committee, now it has to go to the House and decide to vote. Anyway, whether the bill is approved as a state law to prohibit or not, I think it would be wise for the town to have an ordinance, because it's so much of a downside to allowing it.
Didn't Woodstock just adopt one as well?
Why wouldn't I don't want fracking waste in my backyard? I'm sure nobody does. But why fracking waste? Why not any waste that's toxic and hazardous? Why wouldn't we seek to do a ban against that? Why one particular fracking?
Well, I think the reason why this has come up recently is because there's so much fracking going on in the country, and close to us would be Pennsylvania. I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah, I don't know Pennsylvania is a state.
And my understanding is that they're looking for places to get rid of it. Outside of the area in which they are doing the fracking.
I appreciate it. I just sort of, on one hand, yet another regulation that's probably yes. going to duplicate a state regulation kind of thing. It's kind of, we're going to regulate ourselves to death here. So that's one issue I have. And my other concern might be to have a broader proposal, which is we don't want toxic waste, whether it's from fracking or from anything.
Well, I wasn't prepared to answer that question, but I would guess that there are already laws in place. I mean, I would have to research that to see what are we already protected against by state statute at this point. I wouldn't know.
The other reason to ban fracking waste is that the state ordinance, the bill that's in front of the state right now,
proposed.
Is not proposed. It has some weaknesses in it, which the other towns have, it doesn't in the ordinance that they're passed, and that is that it doesn't include waste from oil, when the fracking is the oil. So that loophole, this ordinance that is being proposed here, goes that.
This is for fracking of any type, even if you're fracking to add water to your system.
It specifically says oil or the ordinance.
From gas and oil, gotcha.
Gas and oil, yes. So that's one of the differences.
Okay.
Just say who you are, please.
I'm sorry, can you ask them to say their names for the record?
Yeah, because she's going to put down who speaks.
I was Susan Essens, Ravenel Road.
And?
Ian Lotus Brooks, Ravenel Road.
Lynn?
I have some more information for the board. This is some information primarily that comes from the Food and Water Watch. They've been helping communities throughout Connecticut to look at this ordinance. In this packet, there's a proposed ordinance, and of the 14 towns in Connecticut that have passed this ordinance, they've used this language. There's also some very common questions. This is about fracking waste. It's not about fracking or drinking water well. At this point, I think it's very crucial to protect our water, our agriculture. These things are supported by our plan of conservation and development and the town tenure plan. There's also an article in there about food stock ban and about Kingdom that has recently passed this. And the information, there's a PowerPoint copy of the American Food and Water Watch. They would be willing to come at no cost to its town to have a public information meeting. And in that, there's a great deal of information about the toxicity of these foods. What happens is that water and chemicals are forced into the wells, primarily in Pennsylvania, and there's a lot of uranium in there. So that brings up the radioactivity of this waste. These liquids are then forced into multiple wells. So as they go, it gets dirtier. And as the storage sites have filled in that area, now they're going further and further away. So at this time, I think it's very crucial that we look at it as a community to be prepared that whatever happens at the state level, we can still protect our town.
Go ahead.
Is this the information that was seen? I got an email with an extensive description of the issue. Because we're not going to read this right this minute, so. I think I got more than your letter about fracking and the issue. I think you emailed me.
That was all of you.
Emailed all of us.
All of us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, okay.
With the Howard.
Or if there's new information, I guess is my question.
I think there's
new information.
This is new information.
Okay, some additional.
This is a copy of what it
is. Thank you. Thank you very much. But if I might ask, why why wouldn't we be, adopt a broader ordinance that would just prohibit toxic waste from coming into town?
I think that'd be a great idea.
I mean, why are we picking on fracking, quite frankly? That's sort of my question. Why don't we want nuclear waste?
There's a degree the word is not coming great. There's an urgency about this particular type of waste. However, you know, as a sustainable grower, as somebody with a dug well, I think all toxic waste should be banned. And when you use the phrase "not in my backyard," I really believe that it's all my backyard. I don't want it in someone else's backyard. I don't want these things stored in Pennsylvania. I certainly don't want them stored in Connecticut, and I don't want them in Austin.
Yeah, because it can seep down and get into the aquifer. It can get into the aquifer, which we have to protect the drinking water. And what they're doing now is, besides the water that comes back that's contaminated, there's all this sludge. And they're putting it in containers and they're shipping it to landfills. In New York State, they ban fracking. They can't prevent the waste from coming because they have no ordinance. We have to have an ordinance so they don't ship containers of sludge to us. And we have a lot of open land. We are vulnerable because we don't have a lot of people. And we're a rural community. And we've got lots of land. And they say, oh, there's a good place to get rid of it. But we're vulnerable.
What I would like to say is, the idea of an ordinance, we already have a template. We have those models from the other towns that have already adopted ordinances. It's ready to go. If we're going to change it now and include other things, there may be an awful lot of legal research that has to go on so that you are actually targeting only the things you want to target and not the things that you don't want to target, whereas this is ready to go. Why not do this and add to it later on should we wish to do that? Rather than delay because we're requiring multiple research. And we would be
maybe removing the word fracking from the but I appreciate
it could,
I appreciate
it could
that
be unintended legally. Consequences in the sense that people, you know, there may be some other thing that people have to do to their water well or do something for some other reason that would then come under this new definition, mm-hmm. and it would be an unintended negative consequence. So it would require a lot of attention.
Thank you.
Discard it with one side. Those are the
things. That's for you. Have the concerned residents looked at certain, I'm looking at the bill right now that's being proposed at the state level, and obviously it includes a lot more than this ordinance that's being proposed now. Is there a specific reason why you chose to leave out certain things such as, you know, definitions of radioactive materials and how it does not include specific types of water, such as it doesn't include geothermal water well or any other well drilled or repair for drinking water purposes? Did you just want it as pared down as possible, or is this an exact replica of what Woodstock passed?
This is the wording that was passed in the other 15 communities with the exception of Washington, Connecticut. And they've gone through their town. In Woodstock recently, their town attorney went through it. So it's something that's pretty tried.
Okay.
So this is almost a boilerplate type ordinances that towns are slightly modifying, if at all.
Yes.
That somebody created.
And did you follow up with some of those towns to determine if they have been able to successfully include the language here that you're proposing, Thompson, includes in its bidding and contracting of projects, and who oversees that that language is in fact included in the bidding.
I was not able to research that.
Okay, I'm just wondering.
I could get that information from the town who was
signed. Okay.
Just passed it.
Right, well, if they just passed it, it might not yet be any sort of an issue or problem that they've had to. I'm just wondering, for regulations and upkeeping purposes, 20 years from now, 15, I mean, I'm sure it'll be something different than hydraulic fracking by then, but, you know, how the town is, the process by which we'll be able to maintain this in each and every, which I'm sure it'll just be routine. We'll just every single time have a template, I'm assuming, for bids and contracts that get submitted. I was just wondering how other towns did it.
These are very good questions, and I will admit that I'm on a learning curve about this. There is urgency, as we've said, because we're ready to get some towns available to ship this stuff. They're full. You know, they're capacity. That's why all these towns are enacting it. And as Lynn said, this ordinance, we're trying to present you with something that we feel that town attorneys, you know, we don't want the town to get into any, oh, well, this is not going to pass legally, so that does it. And lastly, I would just say, there's a woman from Food and Water Watch, Jennifer Siskin, I believe is her name, and she could probably answer some of these questions. We're aware that, you know, these are good questions and that she is much more knowledgeable, I know, than I am. I'm still on a learning
curve. Sure. No, I was just curious. Would that be Jen Kissling? Kiskind?
Siskin.
I'll get it right. It's late. Okay, excellent. Thank you.
So, if it's helpful, I found three ordinances on the internet from three different towns.
That have passed.
And I made copies. Yeah.
Thank you.
They're in place already. So, if that's helpful to you. And the other thing, Shana, you said you were asking about certain, why wasn't radioactive material in there? Under this portion, under natural gas waste, it kind of enumerates a number of heavy metals.
Oh, it defines
and so
it.
On.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. So it is in there. It's just not. It's a different definition, if you will.
It's within another definition.
Okay. Perfect. Thanks.
No, I haven't recognized anybody at this point because I didn't know if there's anything else as well. Well, looking at the list, I see my thoughts were. I was hoping that Putnam or Killingly had done something with this already, because town attorney represents
those as well.
So I was hoping that there may be something that, and I can ask him that, as well as I can even speak to Tony and Putnam, and I can talk to Sean and Killingly, town manager and the mayor. You know what they're considering as well. You know, it's possible that they could be presenting something to the town attorney as well. And I can speak with Alan Walker out of Woodstock.
Another thing, just following up to my question earlier about overseeing. I see that Brantford did have included enforcement officials in its ordinance. Again, is that something that, and Lynn, you might know this just with your experience with ordinances here in the town, would this fall under any existing official or individual or entity spelled out in our existing code of ordinance that would oversee something like this, or would this be a new, possibly a new venture?
Well,
this is going to be an off the top of my head answer, but Carolyn and John, is this something that you see either as a conservation of wetlands or zoning yes, or all three in some way? The only time that you would need enforcement is if somebody's trying to come in and dump. And so what do we do now if, let's say, somebody comes in and dumps asbestos someplace in town? What do we do? This happened some years back.
Well, we have our enforcement people, our building official, zoning, inland wetlands. I don't know how much power conservation has as far as enforcement, probably none. So, I mean, you're looking at, and if you go back to what we did with the abandoned vehicle ordinance, junk vehicle on property, that was part of the zoning enforcement officer's duties, but that was spelled out in the ordinance that was written back at that time, who was going to be the enforcer. I'd be very curious to see what the state was going to do as to who would enforce it at the state level, whether it be DEP or whoever, and get an idea from that.
So if we did not have an enforcement officer specific to a particular thing, let's just say asbestos. But we became aware of the fact that there was a pile of shingles that had asbestos in them, let's say, or flooring or something, wrong someplace in town. And so the selectmen were notified. What could you do? Can you call the police?
If it's an ordinance, if it is an ordinance, and the reason we had revamped the ordinances in 2011 was to put an actual ordinance number on that,
yes,
which means at that point the state police could turn around and issue a violation, citation for that. The other thing would be then you would end up going through, legal means town attorney, at which point cease and desist, injunction being filed, whatever that is appropriate for the, based on the ordinance.
Right.
So there's a few unanswered questions as how it would be enforced.
Yes,
and that's why I'd be very curious to see if Putnam and Killingley are looking at this right now, and speak with Alan Walker in Woodstock, as well as Pomfret is looking at doing this right now as well. It's under consideration based on this information. So I don't even know if they have considered any of that as well that's in the immediate area, because you're looking at...
Well, my guess is that if it was a company that was coming from another state, could a complaint be made to the licensing entity?
Well, DEP may even get involved because of the transporting of the hazardous waste. There has to be permits and so everything that's appropriate. The type of things, roadside dumping, that you may not find who dumped it,
right,
and we end up cleaning it up accordingly based on the requirements. This would be a abandoned place, not allowing it in town. And I think that's pretty, unless it's illegal dumping, like we get on the roadside now, they'd be trying to come through to get a lease or, work out something with a property owner in order to gain access. So I don't know if those questions were asked of the other town. So it's a good question to pose how it would be handled. So we will reach out. I mean, the other thing that we have done in the past, anytime an ordinance is up for review, we will forward it to the Ordinance Review Committee appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And I did speak with one of them today, and his suggestion was, this is not to linger. If they're going to do it, they're going to immediately get on it, get it done, and move it on. Because of the nature of it, it's not something to procrastinate over. So
that's my feeling. Yeah.
I figure what your name is.
Ann.
Ann.
I think the DEP does enforce it right now, because there is a ban from July 1st. So if the state passes this new law, they should be the ones enforcing it.
And I would agree with you, provided that the state goes through with the House bill, puts it through. But as with any of the laws out there, sometimes they're all very well good intended, but sometimes they don't make it. And they may revisit it in the next session. So there may be a gap in between. It is a lot easier when the state has it than somebody like DEP would get involved and so forth. Okay. Ron Tiller.
Ron Tiller, Candy Home Road. One of the reasons I'm concerned about this, I read the report, Connecticut report, saying that Pennsylvania is the state that has the real problem, because that's where the fracking goes. And you hit the nail on the head when you said transporting fracking waste up here is going to be one of the issues. But here's what's happening in Pennsylvania. 60% of fracking waste is purified, very expensive, billions of gallons. Some 30% is recycled. They just turn it around. At the moment, only 10% is being dumped into the ground. The problem is, the report that I read today says that a good place to dump it in the ground is in New England.
I'll entertain a couple more. Roman?
Roman Davidson, Fair Road. I'm not totally up to date on this, but last I knew, the chemical mixtures that they used to frack were secret. As of a few years ago, I haven't heard that that's changed. So we don't even know, besides the things coming up, the uranium and all of the things that are springing up out of the ground, we don't know what the original chemical composition.
Or they're putting into the ground to get it out.
In. So that, because, you know, it's like, they won't tell us, it's their own little secret. So that concerns me greatly. We wouldn't even know what it was.
Well,
Rob Mann, 15 Mill Drive. Yeah, I think, I hope the town takes it seriously and does push this ordinance through. And because you can always amend it later if you wanted to add other chemicals that you feel or anything else in the future. I mean, we can amend anything with our town ordinances. The other thing is you can't put all toxic waste, because then you'd be throwing yourself in a situation where a gas station couldn't be in town because, you know, gasoline is in a tank underground, has to be stored on the property, and that's hazardous too. So you gotta kind of just go at what you want to get rid of right now and go on from there. And we all know with the amount of power plants they're trying to add in locally, just in our little northeast corner, it's definitely going to be a concern, you know. They're trying to throw loads down our throats, so this is just another thing we protect ourselves from. Thank you.
Wayne.
William Bryan, 108 Paving. That was basically what Rob was saying. But also, like fiberglass posts, anything that petroleum starts, anything, that was all the one that if you were to change the ordinance, you're better off staying with the blueprint that you got and go for it with that. Get that on the book and then deal with whatever else you have to deal with. Because if you go off course, you may end up really muddled.
For you, if I may ask Lynn a question, and for anyone really. Again, I understand that this is 15 towns have adopted something similar, so and I'm just comparing to the existing bill. Two things that popped up real quick. Did anyone get the opportunity to look at the hazardous waste management regulations to see if we wanted to cite that in our proposed ordinance here that might go a little bit above and beyond, or to or reference it, because it's referenced in the House bill?
It is.
There was a mention of it, yes, but it's mostly, so the House bill just...
originally, they were charging the DEP with with promulgating regulations.
Mm-hmm.
That has been, my understanding is that is no longer in there. So perhaps that is left over from that. I'm not sure. But it doesn't make sense to me that you want to cite regulations if you're not regulating it, you're prohibiting it.
Okay.
It's just my first thought. I probably have to look through those regulations to see whether there's anything in them that would apply when you're prohibiting them.
Right. Okay. All right. And then the second thing was if the residents had considered, and or if other towns had considered, for that matter, if a person or company is interested in exploring for oil or gas in the town, if there would be any limits set on that could be included in here, or if you wanted to strictly look more at the introduction of waste into the town versus searching for...
At this point, that's it.
Okay, thank you.
I was just looking at the info you gave us at the who sponsored the House bill. I was hoping that somebody co-sponsoring was from up in this area, and I don't see anybody on that list at all.
No, they may not have been on that.
Well, no, it may not be. That's why I was just looking to see if there was somebody up here.
Yeah, I noticed that as well.
You know, that way, you know, we could reach out to them very easily and, you know, try and get a feel, you know, where this thing is going up there as well. You know, if it was Danny May or, you know, the guy that replaced Mike Alberts and, you know, the representative from Killingly. So they're all, you know.
One of them might have a feel, though.
Yeah. Well, I was just hoping that one of them had co-sponsored, so that way you get a little better feel of, you know, what the thinking is on it, you know, where it may be going, and does it have any legs at this point?
I think the closest one is Susan Johnson of Wyndham.
All right, is there anything else?
Would you...
Susan?
Just quickly, Susan, one of the things that I've read is that the DEP rules on paper cannot protect Connecticut from accidents, spills, and leaks if these wastes are allowed into Connecticut. So I think that takes a deeper dive into the different questions that you have to look and see, you know, what the DEP rules are and if they really cover enough. And that's the reason why this ordinance covers the oil, whereas the state ordinance, the bill before the state doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
This is stronger to protect.
Right, and it looked like, too, that the commissioner would have the authority to allow certain people, it's like up to three, and then they had some crazy equation, depending on X amount of gallons that were to be used, to allow certain individuals permission to, it looks like, move in and out waste from place to place, if they were professional or whatever word they use. It's nice. Oh, okay.
Okay, I have no problem with engaging the ordinance committee as well as reaching out to, you know, Pompett's working on a couple of the others and get some information and reach out to town attorney. Well, as well as Killingly and Putnam without reaching to town attorney to see if they're already working on it as well. I mean, I take it we're all under the consensus that this is something that we should move forward with.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Okay. Would you like a motion? We'll just then forward it to the others.
Yeah, we'll start the process and expedite it as quickly as we can.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Come on.
Just a quick sort of a bigger picture is that I think it's good for us as a town to try and at least have something on paper to find a technical. I'm not sure we can count on the federal government or even the state government with the budget situation we have in the country. And perhaps, I mean, we don't know how many DEP people will be left.
that, you know, this is the situation. And so at the federal level, if they kind of eliminate regulations as we want to in general, I think we should at least have a legislative.
I agree. So, you have the town ordinance, and then you have a state, and then you have federal. And your town one, you know, you have to, and I dealt a lot with state and federal. If this, whichever one is stricter is the one that ends up being enforced. So, you know, if federal is stricter than state, federal value lines go on the same thing, you know, from us to there. Based on what we have. One of the things I will say about DEP, you don't want to get on their bad side.
I don't.
If you do, they will make it very difficult. Even if they are short in staffing. Okay. All right, thank you. All right. Historical Society correspondence, which I gave out at the last meeting, which was the letter from Joey Martino, the president, asking that we entertain the possibility of signing the building over to him. We all know the roof issue that was there, and I'm sure you all had time to think about this. The process for this is to go to planning. Once, if we're in agreement to explore this, and then eventually the town meeting. I've had some preliminary discussions on this. You know, the town would have an option in the contract to get the building back if they ever disbanded. One of the other concerns that would have to be worked into that, and I had a brief conversation with the town attorney, is what would happen if they took a loan, became insolvent, and went away and gave us, you know, offered the building back. You know, then now we would end up, or whoever may be liable for that loan or whatever, and it'd be a concern. You know, as far as whatever agreement we reach with the, if we so move it, you know, in this language, moving it forward. So, if the consensus is to explore and bring it to the town, then I will start the process at the next meeting with planning and see what their thoughts are on it.
That would be my recommendation, whether or not we should move forward that way.
I just wanted to make sure we didn't really overly discuss it at the last meeting. And I will fill out the information and bring that to P&Z at their next meeting this month. There's a process of doing that. So I will stop moving that forward, and we can get Joey Martino and the historical down as well and have a discussion with them at some great length, you know, about how that would transfer over and that type of stuff. If I remember correctly, they were supposed to be meeting this month at the very beginning of June, I can't remember, as a committee. So.
Yeah, clearly the letter, the tentative proposal needs to be fleshed out, I think, quite a bit.
Yeah.
But in general, I think it's a positive step.
Yeah. So we'll, with that, I will move that forward and start the process with the, because ultimately at the town meeting, as Miles said, I'm not one of the townspeople. Okay. We are back. I did put back on the agenda, and for whatever the reason, I did not have it. Nope, I do. There we go. Four. Didn't see it. The appointment to the Inlands Wetlands Commission to appoint Diane Chapin, dated May 2nd, turned to end March 15, 2019, to the Inlands Wetlands Commission for the town of Thompson to fill a vacancy. Its Board of Selectmen, Kim Bosley, Shana Smith, and Stephen Herbert. We did not act on that. We wanted to think about it. And I still will make the motion to appoint her. I think it's, somebody has expressed interest in a board, and I did not see anything compelling that would exclude, and with anything when it comes to ethics or conflict of interest, that that person should, you know, I would consider that particular person, if they were trying to do a development with, that they're selling with, you know, wetlands and so forth, that that would be an obvious to accuse themselves of that. Other than that,
I think there were a number of questions you had last time. Could you?
So we did receive some information from that department, and that it would not be a conflict having her as a realtor. And I think perhaps there was a little bit of miscommunication in that. I don't think we were in any way trying to say that that was a conflict. We were making sure, doing our due diligence and ensuring that there wasn't already an internal policy by the Inland Wetlands that would restrict individuals from that type of profession from serving, to which they answered no. So I think to Ken's point that if they are feeling that it's not a conflict for them.
Ken, I don't know, did you have a chance to talk to this individual?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay. Because I think there was some other, we thought the, if my recollection is correct, I think we had some concerns about the application being casually prepared.
Yes, and so
better terms.
And so I think it's interesting that you said that, because one of the things on my radar that I didn't mention was because we brought up also the fact that only one out of those three applications that we received had attended the meeting. Yes. So kind of just branching off of this, I would like to look at creating some standards for the appointments moving forward. So we already have the application. That's great. Gives us the foundation. But maybe perhaps we should create some policies that would allow us to say, you know, if whether or not that be that the first selectman, you know, has to interview, or that this any applications go towards that committee for review, because like the Rec Commission always has come forward with their recommendations, and we usually approve them because it went through that process, and we know that the members feel comfortable. And so I feel like, you know, sometimes when we get the appointments, I'm not an Inland Wetlands guru at all, so I'm not sure if that would be a conflict having a realtor. But again, one of the questions or one of the points that you did make, I was concerned with kind of the laxed approach in that application. That being said, I know that we also really need individuals to serve. So it's kind of that fine balance of, you know, giving the individual the opportunity to serve and seeing how that works out and/or.
And did you, I don't know if you had a chance to talk to Marla?
I did speak with Marla.
Those individuals.
Ron Tillen is here tonight. He is one of our Inland Wetlands committee. You've been listening to what's going on, Ron.
As you well know.
Do you foresee any issue for a conflict?
We desperately need another member in order that we can ensure that we have a quorum.
Right.
And we could be holding up some very important business if we don't get another member. I think the members that exist are strong-minded and certainly dedicated, and I'm quite sure that if there were something that didn't sit right, we would certainly outvote something that didn't sit well with us. I have no qualms.
About this individual?
Yeah.
You know, you're familiar with this individual.
All right, thank you. I know the family from way back.
Well, you've answered my question right there.
Thank you.
I did speak with Marla, and the person was recommended by the Inland Wetlands officer from Woodstock.
Okay.
That happens to work.
You're addressing my concerns.
Yeah, and they it was recommended that way, and that's when she had applied and thought she'd be an asset to the town. So with that, I did make the motion to appoint.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
It's got an R in her. Wanted to make sure.
I think he's used to having to check that out.
Thank you. Okay, next on, since our last meeting dated 4/17, I do not have the copy of the resignation.
I read it as well.
It wasn't in the packet. I did get it on the 19th. His last day is Friday. He is staying on an extra week. I do thank Alvin for the time that he has done with the town all these years as building official, as well as zoning enforcement officers since that became vacant a year or so ago. So with that, I am in the process of working with trying to find an interim zoning enforcement for the moment while we explore. I did reach out to NECOG. They do have somebody that is helping another town out that may be available through NECOG, just on a short-term basis. There was another gentleman that I reached out that did fill in briefly, has made an offer. We need to have a conversation on that based on what he was looking at. And we do have another person on an interim basis. One also possibly that's... I already said that one. And another one that is retired that may be willing to help in the short term. Those negotiations would have to be whatever she's expecting.
Yeah, we sort of have the same options that we've had with the building inspector in terms of combining.
Correct.
Or going elsewhere. Yes. Or working with another town. Mm-hmm. All those choices are still available.
But on the short term, Alan did say he stayed through Friday, which he's cleaning up his backlog and organizing and so forth. So whoever does come down will be able to...
Step in
and figure out what is going on. So with that, that's the update there. And as soon as I get something that we can work with, I'll let you know. And then we can figure out long-term where we're going. All right. Okay, next is FYI for the board. Marie to myself, safety and health committee members. Okay, this is something that is required. We've had it in the past and it has been inactive. It was started maybe half a dozen years ago. And so it is a committee. It can, people have volunteered to be on it. It may mean that you have to have a mixture of department heads and the regular troops in this, and with some volunteers, such as Dick Trudeau is a volunteer, and some are highway guys, some are regular people within the in the office, between highway, etc., as well as department heads. So, with that, this is.
I'm glad you've got it organized and Marie's got it organized. And yeah. Moving forward.
Marie's been working on it. So he'll be getting ready to hold the first meeting. So this was to let you know and that this will be going on.
Great.
Hopefully that'll keep our workers' comp costs down.
Yes, and it will. Just to let you know, I will be, I do have a tentative schedule with HGC Group, which is our insurance consultant, to come out and do a risk assessment on our buildings that is scheduled for the day after Memorial Day. They're coming out to go over and advise us what may be, and that will kind of go in hand with the safety and so forth, because they look at that as well. So that will be also going on the 30th, unless they reschedule. But that's to look at the, say, the highway garage, the town hall.
Library.
There's a library. We have a couple other buildings.
The
T. the museum. I mean, there's buildings at the town halls.
Okay.
Just to go over that, so keep our list up.
And do they provide us with that report at the end then?
Yes, they do, and their recommendations. And they do that in writing. They did the highway and the town hall before they even did the individual fire departments. And gave them recommendations. He's going to do as much as he can. He may have to schedule another date and go over some of the stuff that isn't done.
Okay, good.
Depends on what he's finding and how long it takes to go through. So we have that going, so that will be done. And with that, next on the agenda is roadless. I don't have anything new on that.
Are you looking to prepare what doesn't yet?
Just what he gave to Orla and the information. So there is other business. I don't have anything. Do either one of you have any other business?
I was looking at my notes, Kenneth. No other business.
Okay.
That'll be quick.
No, but if you have some, that's fine.
Oh, no. No, really, no.
Okay. I didn't think you heard me. You were kind of...
Well, if I might...
Sure, go ahead.
This sort of begs the question, how do we stand on that fire assessment?
The fire assessment, I sent in the recommendations that we had talked about to the contract, and I'm waiting to hear back.
From the town attorney, you mean? Or from... Who are you waiting to hear back from?
On the study. You're talking about the fire study.
The contract before, I guess, is what we were...
Right. We had reviewed, and there was the deadline, there was the report, the stuff that we wanted to make sure that was in there. I sent that off to him last week.
And I recommended that we put some references and see if there... And I asked if we had considered other consultants or other ways to get the same information. That was just a question, I don't know.
I went with the area one that I knew based on...
Only this guy.
Based on the report that I had seen from Sturbridge, what had gone on there and how in-depth the report was. That he's local. I did see what Don did send, because I did go online and started looking at...
In addition to these, I think, and maybe there's more in there. I didn't obviously go through the whole package here, but I know there were some derogatory comments about this particular firm from Southbridge. Doesn't mean they were right, but there were some comments that were not favorable, let's put it that way, about this performance of this consultant in Southbridge, not Sturbridge, but Southbridge. So I apparently did work there. So that's why I asked, did we get references? Do we have other places he's gone? And have we talked to them about whether they were satisfied or not? And again, my question was, have we thought about other potential providers of the service? It sounds like we haven't. And
area to the providers, I'm not aware of anybody else that is doing it. There was a couple that were from out in the Midwest that would come out, and there's costs associated with that coming out here.
I'm in favor of the project.
I'm in favor of the project, too.
In general, but I learned, and it looks like Don's found some stuff here. I also saw some stuff as well that raised a question about this particular firm, and that off me a little bit. That's why I think it's important to get some references and make sure that we're going with someone who's going to provide us a product that we want. What I read online is not particularly positive. I don't know if you had a chance to look at that.
I've looked at some of it.
So it made me very concerned about the firm you picked.
And the town is not beholden to this particular company. My understanding was that the approval of the funds for the study was for the study, not for the...
Oh, absolutely right.
Not for the hire of that specific company, correct?
I think we're proceeding is with this firm. That's my concern.
But the contract hasn't been signed, so until that point, then we do have the option to perhaps...
And that's why I'm raising this question now.
Right.
If anybody comes up with something that...
Well, I'm wondering...
I don't know how many other options there are, and it sounds like there's this guy and there's somebody in the Midwest. Maybe we need to explore a little more, because there's enough questions about this particular firm. Maybe they're okay, but I would have big questions about it. I'd like to get myself more comfortable. If I was in your shoes trying to select a firm, I would be very concerned about whether this firm is the appropriate. That's not what I read.
Well, whatever you have, if you...
And it looks like you're seeing stuff I hadn't discovered before, too.
If you see something and you have a specific question, and give it to me, and I will, you know...
Well, I get well then.
Because I may not find everything that you may have found.
I mean, I just Googled the company, and there's some comments online that you can find. It's not that difficult.
But if you have,
disturbing.
If you have something in particular that you want me to explore, please give it to me, so that way I have it.
Well, I think the question is, I mean, sometimes we bid, sometimes we don't go out to bid.
Right.
You know, and I understand the costs associated with going out to bid, and I also understand the timelines can obviously be extended going that route. So, you know, I mean, for me as a board member, I'm kind of wondering, how do we decide what we go out to bid for and what we try and find internally, and what's the reason for going and doing our own studies versus going out to bid?
I think there's a cutoff in terms of the value of the contract that guides us as to whether we have to go out for bid or not. That's part of it.
Bid
policy. It doesn't mean we can't go out for bid for everything. That's correct. Certainly over $10,000, I believe we're required to get close.
Well, this is getting close to
this is very, just teetering. Obviously just under, mm-hmm. I think maybe intentionally. You know, again, based on what I've learned, I'm very reluctant to engage this particular firm.
And he has not been engaged.
The contract is starting to be looked at. But that contract would serve as a baseline for whoever we go out.
That contract is with him, and that's all we've looked at.
And the language is there.
That's why I'm raising the flag. Maybe this is the wrong guy.
And please forward to me what you may have found that I may not have seen.
Okay.
And the question, and I will...
And it looks like we've got something.
Yeah, I haven't looked at what he's gotten there. So.
Would you like us then to also, in addition to that, like us to look at some alternative options? Or have you already done that and found nothing?
I've gone online and I have not found very much with it. So if you happen to find something, please forward it.
Okay.
I might ask Don a question. Don, are these just two? Or is there, I just haven't had... Are there multiple issues in this?
Is that...
You should read it in detail. Again, this is just to make the board aware so we don't make any mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
No, thank you.
Citizens' comments, we'll be back to that. Anybody have any last suggestions or comments that they would like to make?
I had a problem with the town taking trees down and not taking the dead ones, taking the good ones. The Star Road. Trees are falling down the road. I don't bother taking the other two to fall. But to take my neighbor's tree down in the driveway, that's 75 feet high, and the town hauled it away. Eversource cut it down.
Eversource, when
we cut it down, but the town spent 2 to 4 hours for 3 days there. To remove it from his property.
If
I'm always a friend of yours. I don't want to say.
No, that has nothing to do with it. The trees come down if they're not healthy.
No, this was healthy.
Yeah, that I don't know because I didn't go out there.
It's 75 feet high, okay. One tree, two of them.
All right. If Leo asked for the trees to go down,
yeah.
Number one, it had to be in the wires where he can't take them down.
Yeah, near the wires.
Okay. And number two, our bucket truck only goes 50 feet.
Yeah.
So when
he just removed it, I know that.
Okay, so.
But he did one previously, 2 years before that. Same thing.
So that's why Eversource or the tree company that cuts, and that's a trade-off for us to take some trees down because we don't have the height in the bucket truck.
Yeah.
Now, the other trees that you may be talking about, Leo may be capable of taking those down on his own. So he may not have gotten to that yet.
On New Road. But what I'm trying to say is, I see him dropping them all over the place, but the town don't take them away.
If the tree is being taken down from Eversource because of the cleaning of the wires, Eversource will take care of those.
No.
When we ask for trees to come down for a reason, it's a trade-off, and usually they drop them, we'll finish them up, and then we haul the stuff away.
I understand.
Okay?
It was so tall, they'd already cut all the branches. The branches were way above the lights. and then we trimmed all the way up. Don't forget, it's like a 75-foot tree. They trimmed it a long time ago.
All right. Like, if there's other dead trees, I'll have Leo look at them to take care of.
Because if one fell already, and the other two are ready to fall on us, they go by. But they just overlooked it.
Well, they didn't overlook it. Like it was.
They went right by it.
Jim, what I'm telling you is, our bucket truck goes up to 50 feet. When we have the opportunity for Eversource to do some cutting for us, which is a trade-off because they store equipment at the highway garage, and Leo will ask them to take trees down that he's not capable of doing because we have to rent the bucket truck to do that. All right? So that was probably the reason why Eversource came in, took down what Leo asked them to take down, and at some point later, Leo will come through and take the rest down because we're capable of doing it.
The ones I'm talking about, they're only like 25 feet high.
Right, and those are, we're capable. Our bucket truck goes up to 50 feet.
Fell down.
So, but anyway, yeah. I'll have Leo.
Because it fell along the road, but the other two are leaning towards the road.
I'll have Leo take a look at them.
Thank you.
Okay. Don.
Don from Mental Floyd. So, Dad, this is my father in front of me. Dad, you don't realize I called Kenny. And he assured me that they were going to take a look at the tree and take him down. I didn't have a chance to tell him, Ken. So I tried to stop you, but I didn't want to interrupt you. So that clarifies that. Again, on this the stuff I gave you guys, I read through it. I was just alarmed by it. I just think that we're trying to protect the people and the board. I don't want us to go into a foolish move. So, I mean, giving a heads up is all I was trying to do. And you should read every detail in it and make your own judgment. That's all we're trying to do. Thank you.
Anything else?
That's it.
All right, bad news is we got some tax refunds. Good for the people that are getting.
Sorry, while we do this, because that's on the...
Yes, go ahead.
It's probably in a... appropriate, but we probably should have noted in either other business or under our comments in reference to taxes and the tax office that we're having our auction, that there is an auction tomorrow on 15 properties, just for the town's reference in case they're wondering what's happening at the town hall tomorrow.
Yes, I didn't think of that. As Shana was saying, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, there was... I forget how many properties that were delinquent in taxes, and I think there's about 15 of them that have not made arrangements with the town to either take care of their problem or make a payment schedule and so forth, and that there will be there's three buildings and several parcels of land that will be on the auction tomorrow at the town hall in the community room there at 10 o'clock. So if you wish to come down and observe, it will be going on.
Yeah.
And if you wish to bid, then I forget what the check you're supposed to bring or whatever certified bank. Anyway, that will be going on if anybody's wondering why the town hall is busy tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning. Okay, with that, going over to tax refunds. I'll make a motion to refund Andrea Austin, $60.80. Jason Livingstone, $29.19. Jason and Gail Livingstone, $80.66. Matthew Martell, $98.74. Walter and Heidi Grudzine, probably butchered it, $699.36, and the same Walter and Heidi Grudzine, $734.88.
Second.
Discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So moved. With that,
second.
Favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.